1620 Green Place.
I can't understand the street.
Green Place.
Green like the color?
Yeah.
What's the phone number you're calling me from? Okay, tell me what happened.
She cut me.
Who cut you?
Downstairs, I don't know.
Okay, hold on.
Responded to.
Hang on.
Hold
on.
Please. I'm downstairs.
Okay, who cut you?
This girl I responded to was trying to break up.
What did she cut you with?
A knife. I'm pregnant. She cut me in my stomach. Okay. I'm afraid.
She cut you in your stomach?
I'm pregnant.
Okay. What is the suspect's name?
I don't remember.
What's your name? Hang on, okay? I'm going to just... She is.
I'm bleeding out.
I know, you need to stay on the phone with me, okay? I'm getting everybody to you, okay? I know, you stay with me, okay? I got everybody coming to help you. You stay on the phone. Don't hang up. 2102, 2121 to 1620 Green Place, 1620 Green Place for a stabbing. Lap page, Lincoln 13, Kona 1443. I can't understand. What is your name, okay? You're going to stay on the phone. Can you grab a towel or anything you can get in your hands and put it on your wound and press? How far along are you?
7 months.
7 months? Okay. Are you alone in the house?
No.
You stay with me. Don't go to sleep. You stay with me. You're downstairs in the basement. And are you alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I locked the door.
Thank you. Michelle, don't you go to sleep, okay? You stay on the phone with me. Can you tell me, did she have any other weapons besides a knife?
She broke a glass.
She broke a glass? Did she stab you with the broken glass also?
Yeah. Okay.
Michelle, you need to think real hard and tell me who it is that did this. Tell me the person's name. Think real hard, okay? Don't go to sleep. Stay with me. Tell me who it is.
I don't know.
You don't know? Have you? Did she break into the house? Does she live there?
No, it's her house.
It's her house. Okay. So you're a renter there, and she's the owner of the house?
No. I responded to her crazy voice ad.
Okay. Everybody's headed your way. Okay. Can you spell your last name for me?
No. What?
Do you have a towel on that?
Yeah. How long?
They're on their way, okay? I need you to take a towel and put it on your wound. How many wounds do you have?
No.
More than one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Help.
Everybody's on their way, okay? Was anyone else in the house when this happened?
Mm-mm.
No? Just you and her? Were you having a fight?
Mm-mm. I was leaving.
You were just trying to leave?
Mm-hmm.
How old are you?
26.
26? Can you tell me what apartment number are you in, Michelle?
1620.
1620? Is it A, B, C, or D?
It's like the first one on the row. Please help me.
They're on their way. They're 1620 Green Place, like the color. Okay. You stay on the phone with me, okay? Don't go to sleep. We got everybody in the way. They're trying to find you now.
Welcome back to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening.
Today's episode, Torn from the Womb, a case of fetal abduction.
More than one case.
Yes. We're going to start by focusing on one case, though.
Okay.
So, in 2015, Dinelle Lane lured Michelle Wilkins, who was 34 weeks pregnant, to her home by posting a Craigslist ad for baby clothes. Now, once there, Michelle was beaten and she was stabbed. Her fetus was then cut from her body. Michelle was left to bleed to death, but she actually managed to call 911 and get help. Now, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, there have been 9 fetus abductions or attempted fetal abductions since 1987. So this is a rare crime, but the numbers have been slowly increasing. So we're going to discuss Michelle's case and the motivations of her attacker, Dinelle Lane, and then also that will lead into some talk about other cases of this disturbing and very unusual crime.
Truly unusual. Way different from a child abduction.
Yes, and kind of more horrific in many ways.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's so many things that can go wrong.
Yes, and it's brutal. It's a really brutal crime.
It is.
Yeah. So let me just do a couple 5-star reviews and we'll get to the beer.
All right.
So our first 5-star review is from Nobama 2012. And I hope that doesn't mean what I think it means, but it's called Very Informative, Well Done Podcast. A very interesting podcast. I almost stopped listening when Southerners were all called racist, but decided to keep listening and saw the apology. So I updated my review to 5 stars because the podcast has been excellent the last few weeks. Now, I don't think we ever called all Southerners racists. I think that's an overstatement.
They might have thought I was painting with too broad a brush there.
Well, yeah, we've been over this. This was way back in the Mike Peterson case.
Right.
It's been addressed many times. But absolutely, we did correct ourselves.
We absolutely did.
Yeah. So, Nobama, welcome to the brewery, and thanks for the great 5-star review.
Yes, thank you.
And then the next one is Love from Mississippi by Sebs5. Keep up the great work. As a huge forensic and crime show addict, this curbs my fix. Love y'all's banter and camaraderie. So Sibs5, welcome to the brewery.
Welcome. Come on down to the quiet end.
And I'll do one more by Tiffany & Company, so that's kind of fancy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Think I can get some jewelry out of this?
Maybe. And it's Brava. So I happened upon this podcast by accident. I listened to various series as I toll away at my day job. At Tiffany's, I guess, cutting diamonds or something, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So Jill and Dick had a wonderful mix of true crime, humor, and beer that a girl can really appreciate. I can't wait to catch up with all the episodes now that I've discovered these two. In an unrelated silly tidbit, Jill sounds just like one of my favorite coworkers just over the cubicle wall. So it's extra great to listen to her.
There, you've got that voice.
Yeah, that's flattering.
It is.
So, Tiffany & Company, welcome to the brewery.
Welcome, girl.
Yeah. And what have we got for our beer tonight? I think you might have something special planned.
I do. How did you know that?
Just an intuition. Wife knows.
We're going to depart from the norm a little bit. And what's going to happen is that the winner of the beer review contest is going to do the beer review for tonight.
Yay.
So it's not a beer from the state that the crime occurred in. This is a beer reviewed by Conscious Cook from Ontario, Canada.
Our winner. Congratulations, Conscious Cook.
There were many, many great reviews. Several of them really stood out, but this was the one that I liked the best.
Yeah.
So we're going to hear Conscious Cook's review of a beer called Lugtread Lagered Ale, which is brewed in Van Cleek Hill, Ontario.
All right, sounds great. Well, let's listen to it, and then we'll head down to the quiet end.
All right, let's do it.
Do you want to tell the reviewer maybe she should email her address to you or something so she can get her prizes?
Oh, I should have said that.
Yeah.
So, Conscious Cook, send us your name and address so you can get your swag that we're going to be sending out to you. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. And thank you. It is an excellent one.
We love the review.
The competition was fierce, so it really was something that you won.
Absolutely is.
Okay, here we go.
Hi, Dick. Hi, Jill. Conscious Cook here, calling from the Great White North. Huge fan of the show. I'm situated 1 hour east of Ottawa and 1 hour west of Montreal, in a small farming community called Vanclink Hill. This gingerbread capital of Ontario is also the home to Canada's biggest and best employee-owned organic craft brewery, Bose All Natural Brewing Company. Today, I want to introduce you to Lugtread Lagered Ale. Lugtread is their flagship brew. It's available all year round. Created by Bose brewmaster Matt O'Hara in 2006, this shit is award-winning on so many levels. This beautiful, light, straw-colored golden beer is 5.2%. It has a hoppy, balanced, malty notes, and it tastes like golden honey graham crackers with fresh-cut hay. The light ale notes and the lager-like crispness smells like a bonfire on the prairies. So Dick, when the package arrives, pull out your Willy glass and pour yourself a pint of this official Ottawa 2017 Beer of the Year. Oh, and Jill, if you want to pair this lagered ale with a really twisted true crime, Montreal's Luca Magnotta is a really truly twisted motherfucker. Convicted of the murder and dismemberment of his ex-boyfriend in 2012, he mailed body parts to various places around the country before leading authorities on an international manhunt which ended in a cafe in Berlin, Germany. It's pretty twisted. Check it out. So find yourself in need of a new brew? Come join Bose and Vanclink Hill for a Lugtread. With many other beers on tap, there's plenty of room at the bar, but there ain't no quiet end.
I love that. That's just a great review.
Isn't it? I like the ending.
Yeah, the ending's the best.
There ain't no quiet end.
There ain't no quiet end. That's right.
But we're heading down to our quiet end.
Yes, we do have one here.
We do. Although I'm noticing, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's that couple that we've seen two or three times before that are sitting down in our spot on the end of the bar.
Yeah, in our area, they're not taking our spot.
No, they're not taking our spot, but they're near us. And yeah. I've seen them, again, two or three times anyway. So I'm thinking, they're a nice-looking couple.
Okay, so that's giving you some kind of idea.
Which is good.
Okay.
But I'm thinking that either they're groupies or stalkers.
Really?
Yes.
And what makes you think that?
Well, this is like the fourth time they've been there.
Couldn't they just be here for the great beer list?
Well, they certainly could, but I think they're listening to us because a couple times they've said after we're done, good show.
That's true, yeah.
So I think I like groupie better than stalker.
Well, it's a more positive word, I think.
Yes.
Although, doesn't groupie imply some kind of sexual interaction?
I don't think so. I think no. It just implies a follower of whatever.
Okay.
Stalker definitely has a worse connotation.
Stalker's not good.
No.
No.
And they look like regular people, so I'm going to call them semi-groupies anyway.
Okay. Friends of the bar?
Maybe? Friends of the bar.
Friends of the brewery?
We'll have to talk to them sometime.
Okay. That All right. sounds like a plan.
Let's get this party started.
All right. So we are talking about fetal abduction. So in most cases of fetal abduction, the abductor is a woman who befriends the pregnant victim, planning to kill her and take the baby through a cesarean section, a very rough cesarean section. Now, unlike infant abductions, the fetus abductor is determined to impersonate a woman who has given birth.
Yeah, that's an important thing.
It is. So this abductor may even take the child to a hospital afterwards, pretending to have given birth at home. Now, these women, they carry out some fake pregnancies, they gain weight, and in some cases, they even use a prosthesis and stuffing to try and look more pregnant. And pressed for legitimacy of their made-up pregnancy, They take advantage of an actual pregnant woman to take possession of the fetus and claim it as their own.
That's correct.
Yes.
But the difficulty, I mean, if they go to the hospital, it's pretty simple to ascertain that they haven't given birth recently.
Yes.
So that's fraught with danger right there.
Yeah, I don't think they're thinking that through.
Obviously not.
No. So, Michelle Wilkins, our first case that we're going to start with, she was 26 years old and 34 weeks pregnant when she was victimized. She lived in Long Mountain, Colorado, when she responded to a Craigslist ad for maternity and baby clothes. Now, Michelle was a nature lover who believed in recycling, and she liked to shop at thrift shops and kind of get cool stuff, not only to save money, but to be earth-friendly and just kind of her funky self. So after speaking with Dinell Lane on the phone, Michelle went to Dinell's house to see what kind of clothing she had there.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds innocent enough, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking to get rid of some old baby clothes, and this woman is ready to take care of it.
And in most cases, I'm sure it would have been. This was just an exceptional case.
Yeah, she met the wrong woman.
Yeah. So when Michelle got to Dinell's house, Dinell let her in, and they went upstairs in a split-level house. Dinell showed Michelle some maternity clothes, and she gave some to her. And then Dinell told Michelle that she had baby girl clothes downstairs, because Michelle was going to have a girl, and Dinell had said she was going to have a boy. So she said that she had girls' clothes that she'd bought before she found out she was having a boy, and that she would go get them for Michelle. So at this point, Michelle said she was starting to feel a little bit weird about the whole thing. They'd been chatting for a while, and things just weren't seeming quite right.
Yeah, there were some vibes there.
Yeah, you get that feeling.
Yeah.
So Dinell had claimed to be 9 months pregnant, maybe even 2 weeks overdue, although she didn't appear to be that far along to Michelle. And when they got downstairs, Michelle had just that bad feeling kind of come over her. Something didn't seem right, so as Dinell appeared to be looking on some shelves, Michelle politely told her that she didn't really need anything and she was going to leave. So she thanked Dinell for the maternity clothes and she turned back to go up the stairs. But as she was walking back up the stairs, she felt Dinell slap her hard on the back. So Michelle was kind of shocked. But, you know, she decided to give Dinell the benefit of the doubt. You're not going to think anything weird is happening, right?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, at that point...
She's turned to leave and get smacked on the back?
Yeah, she said, oh...
I'm thinking that's kind of weird.
Well, yes, but she thought, oh, did I have a spider on me? Because that's a reason why someone might slap you on the back.
Okay.
Right? So Dinell said, I think I got it. And then she grabbed Michelle's sweater and kind of was scratching at her back and turned her around by her sweater and pulled her back down the steps. Now, oddly, Dinell threw up her hand, saying she didn't trust Michelle and she was going to call the cops on Michelle. So it was clear to Michelle that Dinell was not a stable person at that point. She just wanted to get out of there.
I'm thinking so.
So Michelle actually got her phone out and said, I'll call the police. But Dinell pushed Michelle towards the bathroom downstairs, as Michelle resisted at this point, so now it's actually a struggle. And Dinell pushed Michelle into a bedroom, and she started punching on Michelle and hitting her on the head with a bottle. Well, she said a bottle, but it turned out it was actually a lava lamp.
Yeah, well, they can look like bottles.
It's similar, yeah. So the lava lamp broke over Michelle's head, and Dinell then used it to stab her with. And she got on top of her, straddling Michelle on the bed, pinning down Michelle's arms with her legs. And Michelle remembers Dinell pushing down on her neck, kind of blocking off her airway.
Yeah, like she's trying to strangle her.
Yeah, before she passed out. So the next thing Michelle remembered was waking up on the bedroom floor with this really severe pain in her abdomen.
Yeah, well, she'd been eviscerated.
Yes. She had this huge incision across her abdomen. She tried to stand, but she fell over and she felt this large amount of bleeding. And then she actually felt her own intestines protruding from her abdomen. I can't even imagine what that was like.
No.
And the fact that she remained conscious is amazing.
Yeah, that's her 911 call we heard at the beginning of the episode.
Yes, yeah. So she was able to stumble to the door there and locked it. And she got to her phone and called 911. And like you said, that's the call that we listened to in the opening of this episode. The 911 operator was able to get the address from Michelle, although Michelle was weak and difficult to hear, which you can definitely hear in the call.
You can.
She's kind of in and out of full consciousness. and the operator kept Michelle on the phone until the police and the ambulance arrived. Now, when help arrived, they found Michelle in the basement of Donnell Lane's house covered in blood. And when they looked under the waist of her stretchy maternity pants, they saw this really large cut across her lower abdomen with her intestines exposed. So she told police Dee, the lady who lived at the house, had done this to her. She also had some defensive wounds and a laceration on her neck, and there was a knife lying nearby. So during the time when Michelle was unconscious, Donnell's boyfriend, David Ridley, had actually come home to the house.
Really?
Yeah. And Donnell had the infant upstairs in the bathtub, and she told David that she had just miscarried the baby.
Because the baby was dead.
Well, we think the baby was dead, but David thought that he saw the baby gasp for air when he picked the baby up out of the tub.
Well, okay. I mean, this is a 7-month baby.
34 weeks,
so
yeah.
32, 34 weeks.
Yeah.
And had been delivered roughly, to say the least. Probably those were agonal respirations and not true breathing.
Yeah. Or the baby was already dead and just some air came out, was expelled.
Possibly.
So David took Donnell and the baby to the hospital. And they arrived at the emergency room with the baby still attached to the placenta, which is really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So when the obstetrician arrived, the infant had already been pronounced dead by the neonatal doctor. And Dinelle's boyfriend was holding the baby, and he was crying, thinking this is his baby that he's mourning over, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Dinelle seemed fine. She was wearing pants, and there didn't seem to be any bleeding coming from her. The obstetrician decided, though, that he would let Donnelle have some time with the baby and her boyfriend to grieve before examining her. So he had the ER nurse give Donnelle some Pitocin to get the uterus to contract and prevent excessive bleeding. And he planned to do an exam in an hour after transferring her up to the maternity floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this same obstetrician saw Michelle in the ER a few minutes later, so that's amazing.
Yeah, well, it's probably a smallish ER anyway.
Right, so this was like...
He's like a ER doc or a general surgeon or something?
No, he's an obstetrician.
The OB guy.
He's the OB on call.
Okay.
Yep. So he had gotten called in to see Donnell.
And in comes this lady with her intestines hanging out.
Well, he'd left the ER after seeing Donnell and returned to his office, which I guess was just across the street. And as soon as he got into his office, there was a call that there was an obstetrical trauma case on its way to the ER, which was very unusual for this hospital. So
No, it's very unusual for any hospital.
Right, yeah, I imagine.
Yeah.
So the obstetrician, Dr. Brian Nelson, returned to the hospital, and he met with Michelle in the trauma room when they brought her in on the ambulance. So I imagine, I don't know if he was making the connection right away, but I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take too big a leap to figure out what's going on here, right?
Right, I would think so.
So Michelle was awake but delirious, yeah.
Yeah, kind of in and out.
Holding her intestines with her hand as the paramedic held pressure with a towel. And Dr. Nelson took her to surgery with the general surgeon. After the surgery, we saw Dinelle Lane on the maternity floor, the two docs.
Yeah.
Dr. Nelson examined her and showed that she had not recently been pregnant nor given birth. Dinelle told the doctor, though, with police present, that Michelle had been at her house, stabbed herself, and Dinelle had performed an emergency C-section to save Michelle's baby. Now, that's a real stretch, don't you think?
I think so, yeah.
Well, yeah, her story didn't make any sense.
No, no one's going to believe that. But that was her story even into the trial.
And she'd actually been telling her boyfriend or, yeah, he wasn't her, or was he her husband?
I think it was a boyfriend, but they lived together.
Yeah. And that she was pregnant and had been pregnant actually for about a year. That's a very long pregnancy.
It was a long pregnancy. So people were starting to get suspicious.
Yeah. And it turns out she obviously wasn't pregnant and her relationship with the boyfriend was falling apart. He really didn't know much about pregnancy, never had a child before. But even he could figure out that as you get close to a year of pregnancy, something's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So Dinelle didn't go to any doctor appointments with him. They'd set up an appointment, something would come up. He just knew things weren't right.
Yeah, he did. The personality of someone who does this, she kind of meets the criteria of the woman who does this crime, right? When we picked this case, I kind of thought that she was an example of a woman that would do this kind of crime.
Yeah, this is a woman who wants to be pregnant, or can't be pregnant, but wants children. And the easiest way to do that is to fake a pregnancy.
Well, I don't know how easy that is.
The easiest way in their mind, I should amend that, the easiest way in their mind is to fake a pregnancy and find a victim and take that baby.
I suppose. I don't think it's ever worked that we know of.
Not from the cases we've looked at.
No.
No?
No.
They always get caught.
Yeah, and somebody dies, usually, yeah. We know. Yeah.
Well, it isn't an easy thing to do.
No.
Right?
Right.
There's a lot of variables that make it really, really difficult to get a baby this way.
Well, yeah, it's crazy, really.
So,
there's no way to do it without ending up killing somebody.
Right. I mean, before that, though, I mean, you have to kind of befriend somebody. Otherwise, I mean, you have to try to figure out the gestational age of the baby.
Yes.
Because if they're too premature, you're going to have a dead baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get a rough idea that the baby's at term or near term. So that's not the easiest thing.
No.
To determine. And then a cesarean section, while it's not the toughest surgery, it's still surgery. You got to kind of know what you're doing. So you got to go to YouTube or someplace and find out how to do an emergency C-section.
Right. And the surgery's not really something you should be doing at home.
No.
It's never going to go well.
I mean, if you're prepared to sacrifice the mother, which most of them are.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you do it. You're just trying to get a viable fetus out of this. So.
But then you have the whole problem of hiding the pregnant woman. People are going to be looking for her.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is very
difficult. And then
difficult.
Playing it off as if you gave birth, it's crazy.
And you can't pretend you've given birth. Well, you can, but as soon as you're examined, people are going to know you haven't given birth.
I guess that's why it surprises me that so many of them go to the hospital.
Yeah, I'd stay away from a hospital.
You would think so, yeah.
And even then, let's suppose things have gone right so far, and you get the baby, or you're getting the baby. I mean, the baby's in a uterus. There's not that much room in there. So if you've taken a knife and you're just kind of slashing through tissue to get to the uterus, you could damage the baby.
Oh, absolutely.
So you got to be very careful there. And once you've delivered the baby, you got to do something about the umbilical cord. So you can't just rip it off or anything like that. The baby will bleed. So you have to cut it and clamp it. Or in this case, just take the baby in the placenta with the umbilical cord all attached. That's one way to do it. So just, you know, take the baby and the umbilical cord and the placenta, they're all attached. That's a way to do it.
Well, I suppose.
Otherwise, but otherwise, I mean, if you cut the cord, you got to tie off or clamp off the stump. Otherwise, the baby will bleed through there. So there's way too many things that can go wrong.
Absolutely.
Way too many. And that's probably why, at least in the cases we've looked at, nothing went right for the perpetrator.
No, it really didn't. Well, Danelle had told David that they would go to an appointment together that week because David had told friends and Danelle that if he didn't get some answers about this pregnancy that day, then he was going to leave her, break up with her. So Danelle was getting desperate to produce an infant to David. So this is when she'd made this plan to take another woman's baby.
I would just comment. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
This guy David must be some kind of stupid.
I don't know. I mean
Jesus.
let's not be mean to David.
For crying out loud. I mean, number one, you've been pregnant for a year. When are you going to produce a baby? Right?
Yes. Right.
And then to say, if I don't see a baby, I'm leaving you. The fuck is that?
Well, I don't know. It was definitely
Jesus.
A dysfunctional relationship.
God.
Yeah. but I don't think we need to blame him. Maybe he wasn't the most clued into things, but...
Oh, he's just a stupid ass.
Okay.
let's face it.
All right, we're going to face it. Well, when Michelle had been lying unconscious and bleeding on the floor in Dinelle's house, Dinelle actually carried the baby upstairs and put the baby in the bathtub. So the infant was dead, and I don't know why the infant was dead, if she just... Who knows why, if she didn't do anything, but... You know what I'm thinking is at least 10% of newborns do need some kind of assistance after they're born.
That's
correct.
You know,
secretions cleared, breathing, right?
Right.
That's
a good number, 10%.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some form of resuscitation. Now, here's a baby that turned out to be like 32 weeks, right?
34.
34.
34 weeks.
Okay. We sure are 34?
That's what I've heard. That's what I read.
7 months would be 32.
Yeah.
All right, 32, 34. But that's a preterm infant.
Yes.
And you've delivered it. Now, the first thing that's going to happen is the baby's going to get hypothermic, too cold, and that's going to shut things down. So, I mean, there's just so much stuff.
So if you're going to read into all this doing a cesarean, why wouldn't you read into what to do with a newborn once they're out?
Because they're not smart enough, I think. To look at the consequences of it. All they're trying to do is get the baby out. Once the baby's out, they're home free. But there's so many things that can go wrong after the baby's out.
Right.
So.
Well, and sometimes in these cases, I wonder if even if the baby's alive is that important to them. Because they can produce, yes, I had a baby.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, some cases that seemed okay with them.
That's very true. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
That, just the fact of showing a baby, whether it's alive or dead, validates you somehow.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And could get you attention and sympathy.
Oh, definitely sympathy.
Right. Yeah, so Dinelle then took about, this is the thing, she goes upstairs with the baby, puts the baby in the tub. I don't think she wrapped the baby in a blanket or did anything to try and help the baby.
Right.
So this is baby laying in the tub dead. So then she actually took 2 hours cleaning up and doing laundry. Actually going into the room where Michelle was, stripping the sheets, going back in and out of the room while Michelle's laying there bleeding to death. She even tried to clean the floors. It's just really bizarre.
Well, the clinical term is nuts.
Yes, that's right. So even after the cleanup, the room where Dinelle had attacked Michelle was covered in blood. I mean...
I'm sure it was.
I saw the photos. There's splashes of blood on the wall. Doesn't matter if you strip the bed. I mean, the mattress had huge blood stains on it.
Yeah.
So...
Well, as you said, she wasn't thinking clearly.
No, she wasn't. So she'd removed the bedding and the pillows and washed them, but the mattress had these big stains and so did the wall. And she actually left her own bloody handprint on the wall as well. So this is not a well-thought-out situation.
Not at all. But, you know, it's not going to matter how many bloody handprints she left or anything. And she's cooked anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, so the thing that got me about this was, though, as Michelle's laying there bleeding on the floor, Dinelle's walking around her doing a cleanup. So do you think Dinelle didn't realize that Michelle was actually dead, was actually still alive? Or she's just in such a state of mind that she's oblivious?
I think the latter. I think she is just in such a state that she wasn't looking at anything else.
I think you're right. It's just really, I mean, you can't say she's insane, but she's definitely mentally ill and not thinking clearly about things.
For sure.
Yeah. But it's also a super selfish decision. Incredibly selfish.
Well, but that's the predominant theme of all these fetal abductions, it's a selfish decision.
It's about them.
It's about them.
Yeah.
I have to document that I'm pregnant, that I've delivered a baby.
If we really wanted to get deep on this, I'd want to go into what makes a woman feel like she needs to get acknowledgement by producing a baby, by being pregnant. Why does she base her self-worth on that? Now, we're not going to go that far into it, but I do think about that.
That's a good topic sometime.
It is, yeah.
Or why she has to justify herself to a significant other.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Why does she need to do this to have a man stay with her? obviously the relationship is not valid at that point. Why is she trying to stay in a relationship that's dependent upon having an infant?
Exactly.
That's really messed up.
Yes. So guess what? Danelle was arrested, and she's held on a $2 million bond. The trial began in February 2016. This is just about a year after the event. Prosecution's case was that Danelle had been desperate and planned out the attack on Michelle to take her baby and pass it off as her own. So she was charged with attempted murder, two counts of first-degree assault, two counts of second-degree assault, and unlawful termination of a pregnancy. Michelle had a good memory of what had happened on that day in March of 2015.
A surprisingly good memory. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just amazed. I've listened to that 911 call, and to have the wherewithal to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, she's near death.
Yes.
She's critically wounded. She could have died.
Absolutely.
And she gave all this information.
She did. So it's amazing.
She's a heroine. So there was a lot of forensic evidence against Danelle.
Absolutely there was.
Right?
Yeah. This was not neatly done.
Case came down to intent. What was Danelle's intent when she attacked Michelle? Prosecution presented evidence of the fake pregnancy. She had a baby shower, she had printed an ultrasound picture off the internet, and she had gained weight. She said she was due in November 2014. We're going to get into tough territory here, aren't we? If she was originally due 4 or 5 months before the attack occurred. Anyway.
Yeah.
So she changed the date to December, and then in January 2015, she posted on Facebook that she had had a baby boy. Then in February of 2015, David insisted that Danelle explain the pregnancy and take him to the doctor so they could talk about it. He's trying to figure it out, but he's too fucking stupid to do that.
Well, and it's very dysfunctional from both sides, yeah. Either you're in the relationship with someone because you love them or you're not. And
right.
This whole pregnant or not thing is a whole other issue that needed to be dealt with.
No kidding.
Yeah. So in March, David had given that ultimatum. If she didn't go to the doctor with him, she and her daughters, she had two older daughters, would have to move out of his home. So another part of this was that Danelle wasn't working. So that's significant because she was dependent financially on David as well. And on March 16th, Danelle Googled what happens to your cervix after birth. And then she put the ad in Craigslist for free maternity clothes. And that's the one that Michelle responded to.
Much to her chagrin.
So the day Michelle came to Danelle's house, March 18th, Danelle knew that David would be home from work about 2:15, 2:30. And if she didn't have a baby and go to the appointment with him, that was the end of their relationship.
And she had no money, so she was going to be in trouble. She was going to be kicked out.
Sure, but this seems extreme.
It does.
Right? There are other ways to deal with this.
But that's how she's looking at it.
Yeah.
I got to get me a baby.
Right. Not that that would really fix things anyway. It would add more. But
obviously,
right. Like we said, she's not thinking
clearly.
But
we're not thinking in the long term. We're thinking short term.
Yeah. So Michelle got there to Danelle's house around noon that day. And the defense claimed that Danelle did not plan to kill Michelle or her baby. They told jurors that Danelle committed an impulsive act of attempted manslaughter. And her attorney said that the crime wasn't planned because she had no plan of how she was going to kill Michelle. She had no weapons set up for the act, or how she was going to get rid of Michelle's body afterwards. Also, Danelle claimed to be pregnant with a boy, and Michelle had a girl. So, although to me, that's not a big deal.
No, it isn't.
Not that much to fool someone that you had a different sex.
And there's no question that there was intent there.
Yeah, I mean.
And so, he can say all he wants, the attorney. Can say all he wants about there is no intent, but she lured this person to her house with the intention of taking her baby.
Right. And as the prosecutor so succinctly put, just because she didn't have a good plan doesn't mean she didn't have a plan. She did have a plan. Now, Danelle's defense team didn't call any witnesses for the defense, and she was found guilty of assault in the first degree, guilty of assault in the second degree, guilty of unlawful wrongful termination of a pregnancy in the first degree and guilty of attempt to commit murder in the first degree. So she was sentenced to 100 years in prison, actually.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what's this guilty with intent to commit murder? I mean, she murdered a viable infant.
Yes, they couldn't prove that the infant had ever been alive.
Oh, that's why they did that.
So that's why it was unlawful termination of a pregnancy.
Okay.
And it depends on the state you're in. But she got 100 years, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michelle was allowed to speak at the sentencing, and at the sentencing, you know, it was really pretty heartbreaking. She displayed this large photo of the baby girl who she was naming Aurora. And Michelle wanted the baby to, as she said, have her day in court. So her main thing at sentencing was to talk about the baby's life, which was obviously ended before it could even get going.
Yeah, I've always found these victim statements kind of macabre.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they want to be able to have their say, but it just doesn't seem to serve any real purpose to me.
Well, not to you, but if you were in that circumstance and it made you feel better.
Well, yeah.
Right? It's not to serve us who are watching it, it's to serve the person who's saying it to get it off their chest.
Okay.
I don't think anyone enjoys hearing them.
No.
No. No, it's really sad. But, you know, if it gives the victim a voice, I think it's a totally legitimate thing to do. I think that in many cases, though, the perpetrator doesn't care. So maybe they're kind of wasting their voice on that person.
Yeah.
So I could see that.
That's one of the things I'm thinking that is falling on deaf ears.
Right. But I don't think that's the point. I think it's just for them to get it out and say their piece.
Okay.
That's the way I see it. So the first recorded fetal abduction case happened in 1987 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Although there may have been a little documented case back in the 1970s, which I wasn't able to verify.
Yeah, they had mentioned something about that, kind of a footnote.
Yeah.
But nothing more.
Right. So 87's the only real case that is documented. 87
is the first actually documented fetal abduction.
Yes. So in 1987, Cindy Ray, she was 8 months pregnant, and she was abducted from the parking lot after her appointment at a prenatal clinic. So, as you mentioned before, you're looking for someone who is coming due. So you're going to look in places where someone who's going to have a baby is going to be, obviously.
Right.
So that's why the Craigslist listing for baby clothes is, you know, the perfect setup.
Good setup.
Hanging out outside a prenatal clinic is also another way to do it.
Yeah, because you can't hang out inside that much because the staff will get suspicious.
Yes.
Because you don't have an appointment.
Right,
you're just kind of lurking there.
So you
got to be outdoors.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I was reading one article that said in the early to mid 80s, there was a rash of infant abductions from hospitals. And then when hospitals adapted to try and prevent those abductions, that's when we saw the fetal abductions occur.
Yeah.
Not that there's a lot of them, but that's when it kind of popped up as a thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because hospitals figured out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that took steps to prevent them.
Yeah. I mean, at some point it was probably easy to do that, but.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have any of the things we have today in terms of badges on the babies and the monitors and stuff.
Locked
cameras,
units. Yeah.
Locked units.
Right.
So in the 70s, it probably was relatively easy to kind of stroll in, take a baby and leave. I mean, I'm oversimplifying,
but back then the nurses could come and take the baby and, you know, the mothers did what the nurses said.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't speak up.
Right.
Right.
So you could show up and say, I'm taking your baby back to the nursery now.
Yeah.
And off you go.
Off you go. Yeah. So Darcy Pierce, she's the one that abducted Cindy Ray. And she'd lied to her husband and her friends, telling them that she was pregnant when she wasn't. So she's kind of paving the way here for future psychopaths.
Right.
So Darcy had been stuffing her clothing a little more each month so she would look pregnant. And Darcy felt that her husband had married her because she'd told him she was pregnant. And if she didn't have a baby, he was going to leave her.
See, the familiar story.
Yeah. Now, she had studied some books about cesarean sections because this is pre-internet. And she'd bought the instruments, actually, that she would need and set up a room in her house to perform the surgery.
So this is a little more carefully planned out.
Yes, yes. But Darcy kidnapped Cindy Ray using a fake gun, and she had her drive to her house. But as they reached the house, Darcy saw that her husband was home.
Whoops.
So that thwarted her plan.
Can't do it here.
No. So she drove to a secluded area up in the mountains. And she didn't have her instruments.
No.
So she strangled Cindy with the fetal monitor belt that she found in Cindy's purse. And then she dragged her behind some bushes. And she actually ripped at her abdomen with a car key until she got through to the uterus and got
yeah.
the baby out.
Now,
I can't even imagine how that's possible.
I can't either. I mean, that's real determination.
Yeah.
To be able to do that with a key.
Yes.
I mean.
Yeah.
But the woman was dead. So here's
semi-conscious at that point,
I guess.
Yeah, she wasn't dead.
She'd been strangled.
Yeah, but she wasn't dead yet, from what I read.
So we're going to get a viable fetus out of this?
No, I don't think so. She left Cindy to bleed to death, and on her way home, she stopped at a car lot and asked to use the phone, and she was covered in blood and told the employees that she just had her baby on the side of a highway. So the ambulance was called, and Darcy was taken to the hospital with the baby. Also, yeah, maybe the baby did live. Doctors were suspicious of Darcy's story when she refused to be examined, and she changed her story, and then she told him that a surrogate mother had given birth with a midwife in Santa Fe for her. So the police were not buying that.
No.
Which is interesting, because this had never happened before, probably in their memory anyway.
Right.
But still, they didn't believe her, and she was arrested.
Well, there's too many things going on in this story to make it to be a believable story.
Yeah. So when reports came in that a pregnant Cindy Ray was missing, the police interrogated Darcy, trying to make the connection there. And she admitted that she'd killed Cindy and taken the baby, and then she showed detectives where she'd left Cindy. But it was too late when they arrived. Cindy had died. She'd laid there and bled to death. So Darcy was found guilty, but mentally ill, and she was sentenced to 30 years to life in prison.
Yeah, so that's the first recorded case of a fetal abduction.
The first one that was well documented, yes.
And it's just horrific.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Using a key.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
No, I can't either. It seems like it would be tough to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Near impossible to do.
So then there wasn't a case for a while until 1995.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's almost 10 years.
8 years.
8 years.
So Fidel Caffey and Jacqueline Williams decided that they wanted a baby, and this is a totally horrific story. This goes beyond even fetal abduction. This is a bloodbath. So that November, Fidel, Jacqueline, and her cousin Laverne Wood, they went into Deborah Evans' home. They shot her in front of her children. Now Deborah was 9 months pregnant, and her baby boy was carved from her abdomen with scissors. So Deborah's 10-year-old daughter, Samantha, was murdered in the apartment with her mother.
Yeah, she is a potential witness.
Yeah. And Deborah's 8-year-old son, Joshua, was taken from the apartment along with the newborn that they'd cut out of Deborah. Now, they just left the 2-year-old son, Jordan, in the apartment because he wouldn't be a witness. So they just left him there with his dead mother.
God.
It's horrible.
You're right. This is horrific.
Now, the day after Deborah and Samantha's murders, police found poor little 8-year-old Joshua dead in an alley. Now, for the story I'd read, this poor Joshua, he had been at home. All right, so he knew his mother was shot. He knew they were carving at his mother's belly. He saw them murdering his 10-year-old sister. And then they took him from the apartment and killed him.
Yeah.
So this kid suffered emotionally and physically just beyond imagination. This was a brutal, brutal, awful crime. So when police arrested Jacqueline Williams, she had the newborn with her. The newborn had survived.
Good.
So the 2-year-old and the newborn were alive.
2-year-old still's alive.
But the mom, the 10-year-old daughter, and the 8-year-old son were all dead.
Right.
So Jacqueline Williams, she was convicted and sentenced to death in 1998. And Fidel Caffrey's defense was that he had nothing to do with the killings, but he was fooled by Jacqueline, who'd faked a pregnancy, and then had told him that she'd given birth. So he's trying to pretend he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Good defense.
Yeah. But he definitely participated, and he was convicted also. And this Laverne Ward, the cousin, he turned out to be the biological father of Deborah's newborn and 2-year-old.
That's just beyond.
So there was a lot going on behind the scenes with these people. This is just a fucking nightmare.
No kidding.
Yeah. And these kids were born into this. It's just a horrible story. I mean, it goes way beyond the topic even, but
yes,
really bad. So the three had their sentences commuted to life in prison in 2003. They all got life in prison.
Yeah, but they didn't get put to death.
No. And half the time they don't get put to death anyway. Right? Well, it takes forever. It
takes a while to be on death row.
Yeah. And like we've said before, I don't really think the death penalty's okay because you're going to get some innocent person put to death, so.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, I've switched around. I used to be a big proponent of the death penalty.
Yeah.
But I think life in prison without any chance of parole is even better.
I think so. I mean, that way they just have to live there with it. It's not like a lot of people think you might be saving money by putting them to death, but it's not that way at all.
No, because there's appeals upon appeals upon appeals.
Right. And I think it's harder to keep a death row inmate. I think it's more expensive to keep them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you might as well put them in the general population and let them sit there forever.
I think so, because every once in a while you're going to have an innocent person who would be put to death, and that's not acceptable.
We can't have that.
We can't have that, no. So in 1995, Felicia Scott of Alabama, she told her friends and family that she was pregnant. So this is another one in 95, 96. And despite the fact that she'd had a hysterectomy in 1994, she was saying this.
So that means the uterus has been removed.
Yes.
So it's kind of tough to get pregnant if you don't have a uterus.
Yeah, there's no place to keep the baby.
No.
Nope. So she befriended a 17-year-old, Carithia Curry, who was pregnant. And she kind of got her to trust her. They became friends, and they spent a lot of time together because Carithia thought that Felicia was pregnant also, and they spent time together shopping for children's clothing, sharing their stories and experiences as expectant mothers. I mean, obviously, Carithia was a very young pregnant person.
Yeah, she's 17. She's 17, so I'm figuring she's pretty naive.
Sure.
And this other woman who's also claiming to be pregnant is influencing her.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. So they spent the day together with Carithia's mother, Carolyn, in January of 1996. And after shopping, Carithia's mother went home, and Felicia Scott invited Carithia to go eat pizza and visit for a while, and Carithia accepted. So they had pizza, and they went to Felicia's apartment. But once they were inside, Felicia pulled out a gun, just out of nowhere, and shot Carithia twice in the head.
So you better get that baby out quick, because there's no blood flow and no oxygen to the infant.
Well, the bullets lodged in her head, but they didn't kill her instantly. But Felicia took a knife and cut Carithia down the entire length of her torso.
So she hadn't been reading up on how to do a cesarean section.
No. And she removed the fetus and she pushed Carithia, still alive, mind you, although probably not any way she could survive, but still alive and possibly having some feeling. She put her into a large plastic trash can and taped it shut with duct tape. And so when Felicia's boyfriend, Frederick Polione, returned to the apartment, she told him that she'd just given birth and that all of the soiled linens she put in the trash can. So this is her story. And she asked him to get rid of it, and he took it to a deep ravine out of town to dispose of it.
Oh, please.
I know.
So
this is obviously...
He doesn't notice that this is pretty heavy?
This is obviously something the two were in on, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
None at all.
But of course, according to Frederick, he never looked in the can or questioned the weight of what was in it.
Well, of course, he's kind of going to distance himself from this.
Right. But in the meantime, Felicia took the infant to a hospital in Birmingham and managed to get a birth certificate saying that she was the mother.
So they obviously didn't examine her.
No. No. But I could almost see how you might be able to pull that off.
I guess.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
So Carithia's mother, Carolyn...
This is 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It could happen.
I guess, because it wasn't that well-known a phenomenon.
No.
So someone shows up and says that she's given birth, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I can see it.
I mean, even now, it's so rare, you're not going to, your mind's not going to go to that place.
No.
No.
Although, I think if, even in our little podunk hospital here
in New England?
New England, that someone shows up with an infant and says, this is my baby I just delivered. She's going to have an exam.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're going to find out that she didn't deliver.
Probably, so. Yeah. But I could see how this could happen. It could slip through the cracks.
Well.
Especially 20 years
20 ago. 20 years ago it could. I don't think it could these days.
So Carathia's mother, Carolyn O'Neill, began to worry when her daughter didn't return home that day. So it's 2 a.m. and she calls Felicia's house and Frederick answers. And he said, oh, we don't know where Carathia is. So then a few hours later at 5 a.m., Felicia calls Carolyn back and tells her that she'd dropped Carathia off at the house around 8:30 p.m. the night before after they'd had their pizza. But Carolyn at this point is suspicious and doesn't believe them. Something's not right here.
That's very perceptive.
Yep.
Don't you think?
Yes. So Felicia told her that she'd been in Birmingham having her baby and was sent home early because she didn't have insurance. And Carolyn was really alarmed then, and she called the police, telling them that she believed her daughter had been kidnapped by Felicia and Frederick. And then when she learned that Felicia had a baby at home, she, you know, she knew what was going on. She told police she believed that they had her daughter's baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the next day, the police questioned Felicia about Carathia's whereabouts, and they asked about her infant, and she produced the birth certificate. So the police left. You know, they've got the birth certificate.
Right.
So, they believed her.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
They believed her. If they'd done a little probing, they would unbelieve her.
Right, but you're not going to think you'd get a birth certificate from a hospital if you didn't give birth.
Right.
So,
no,
that was kind of the way that she was getting away with it on a temporary basis.
Temporarily.
Temporarily, yes. So, the next day, the police questioned Felicia about the whereabouts. So in February, Felicia went to visit her father and made up another story about how she'd had the baby. She said that the police had stopped a car that she had been riding in with a friend and that she'd fainted when they got pulled over. And then she said when she woke up, the friend and the police were gone, but the baby was on the seat next to her.
Whoa.
So it just like magically happened.
Magically happened and they just left.
Yeah.
Without making sure that the baby was okay, or that the mother was okay.
They just left her there. So
I don't think I'd buy that story.
Yeah, the father wasn't believing it. Obviously, this woman had problems, and even her father knew this. And he was going to ask her to leave, and then the police just showed up and arrested her at that point. So it wasn't until March 14th, though, that they found Carathia's body. And it was at the bottom of a ravine. And evidence, including some blood in Frederick's truck, convinced the prosecutors that the murder was not done by Felicia alone. The couple was charged with kidnapping and murder. So it sounds like it's something that, do you think they planned it out together or he just came in at the end? I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't think they might have necessarily planned it out together.
Yeah.
But he was certainly complicit.
Absolutely.
Because How can you...
You can't go... Why would you go take a heavy trash can to a ravine?
And to throw it down a ravine?
Yeah,
makes no sense. You're trying to hide it.
Obviously,
yeah. I mean, if it's just bloody linens and stuff...
There'd be no reason.
Toss it in a dumpster or something.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So I'm going to vote for both of them.
Being guilty.
Being guilty.
I think that's a good vote. Frederick maintained in trial, though, that he knew nothing of the murder... And then Felicia turned around and blamed Frederick for the murder. So she said that she only went along with it because he'd threatened her.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's obvious.
So Frederick was sentenced to 20 years. Felicia Scott was given a life sentence without the possibility of parole. And it was determined by autopsy that Carathia Curry, she'd lived about 12 hours after being shot and cut open.
Ew.
In that trash can. I can't imagine the suffering. Now, the baby girl, though, did survive and was returned to her biological father.
So there's a little bit of good.
A little tiny bit of good, yeah.
Okay, then we have another case in 1998.
Yep.
Josefina Saldana killed Margarita Flores to get her unborn baby. She, oh, help me.
Yeah, is it bad?
Yes. She scattered Margarita's dismembered body in Southern California and Mexico. So she killed this woman to get the fetus.
Yeah.
And then dismembered her and took her body parts all over the place.
Ugh, that's terrible.
Josefina had posed as a charity worker and promised Margarita free baby furniture and diapers.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thread here.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have some hook to draw the victim in. So this was the easy one.
Yeah.
So Josefina was arrested after she brought a dead fetus to the hospital and said the baby was hers.
So why did she do that?
I don't know.
Right? Because she could have just not said anything and gotten rid of the fetus.
Right.
So that's extra bizarre to me.
Isn't it?
She pretty much got herself caught there.
Yeah, because Tess revealed that she hadn't even been pregnant.
Right,
she was convicted and killed herself in a jail cell 3 years, 3 days
later. 3 days later after her conviction,
She hung herself.
Yeah. But it's strange to me that she brought the fetus to the hospital.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're not thinking clearly.
Yeah, but if you want a baby and the baby dies, why would you go to the hospital with the dead baby when you know that your chances of getting in trouble have gone up dramatically when you do that?
Again, I guess you go back to thinking that she needs to validate the pregnancy.
Yeah, like they want credit for having a baby, whether it's dead or not.
Right.
It's really strange.
Beyond strange.
Yeah. So another one was in September of 2000. Michelle and Thomas Bikas, they met John and Teresa Andrews while shopping for baby items at a Walmart. Now, the couples chatted about the cost of baby supplies, and they learned that they lived only 4 blocks from each other. So a few days later, Michelle announced that there had been a mistake with her sonogram, and she was actually having a boy, not a girl, as she'd previously said.
Uh-oh. Red flags.
Yeah. So John Andrews received a call at work from Teresa around 9 a.m. on September 27th. So 9 months pregnant, Teresa was trying to sell her Jeep. A woman had called Teresa saying she was interested in buying it. So John told Teresa to be careful, and he tried to reach her throughout the rest of the day to see if she had sold the Jeep. But Teresa didn't answer her phone. Then when he got home, he found that Teresa and the Jeep were gone, but her purse and her cell phone were still in the house.
Well, there's a big red flag, too.
That's never good.
No.
So that same day, Michelle Bika called her husband, Thomas, at work and said that she'd given birth to their new baby boy.
A switch.
Yeah.
The baby girl became a baby boy.
Yes. So she explained that her water broke and that she went to the hospital in an ambulance. She said she'd given birth and was sent home because of a tuberculosis scare at the hospital. And he believed that.
Yeah, well, he's a layperson.
It's possible.
Sure.
Now, family and friends were told the good news, and over the next week, people came by to see the new baby that they'd named Michael Thomas. Now, friends described Thomas as an ecstatic new dad, but they said Michelle seemed really distant and depressed. Well, so she might have actually had some remorse.
She clearly did.
Mm-hmm. Now, she talked about the news of the missing woman, and she said she wasn't going to display their new baby flag in the yard out of respect for the Andrews.
Oh, how nice of her.
So a break in Teresa's case came when they identified the woman through phone records who'd called Teresa about the Jeep. And, of course, the woman was Michelle Bika.
And guess who it was?
Yeah. Michelle Bika, with the first interview she had with detectives, she was evasive, she was nervous, and when the FBI checked her story, they found out that she'd never been to the hospital. And, of course, there was no tuberculosis scare.
Well, of course.
So,
and even that, no, I mean, that's a good enough excuse to use to a layperson. To a medical person, that's not going to stand up.
No. Well, and let's back up a little here, the whole pregnancy thing. Can you be in a relationship with someone and say you're pregnant and they don't know? Don't they ever see you naked? Don't they ever feel the baby move? I mean, that doesn't make sense either.
No, it doesn't.
It's all dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think we're looking at the pattern.
Yeah.
It's a relationship that's a dysfunctional relationship.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
How many times have we heard that you need to produce a baby, otherwise we're done?
Yeah.
I'm going to kick you out.
Right.
It's dependent on the woman to have a baby.
That's bizarre.
It is.
So on October 2nd of that year, detectives returned to do their second interview with Michelle Bica. But as they pulled into the driveway, she locked herself in a bedroom and shot and killed herself.
Oh, geez, another one.
Now, Thomas was found outside the locked bedroom door in tears, and thankfully the baby was in a different room. So the body of Teresa Andrews was found in a shallow grave covered in gravel inside the Bica's garage. So she'd actually done this and buried the woman in her own garage.
She by herself? Her husband didn't help?
No. So this was insanity.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, she'd been shot in the back, and her abdomen had been cut open, and the baby had been removed, obviously. So authorities took the newborn baby from the Bica home to the hospital, and after they did testing, the DNA results proved that the baby did belong to the Andrews. So Thomas Bica, he told police he believed everything Michelle had told him about her pregnancy and the birth of their son, and he was actually given polygraph exams, which he did pass. So investigators are convinced that he was not involved in that crime at all.
Well, see, here's another stupid person.
Well, that's harsh.
Oh, God.
Maybe naive.
All right, that's okay. Too nice. So let's take some place in the middle between naive and stupid.
Ignorant.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. Not educated in the ways of life.
This is just beyond belief to me.
But this guy was not threatening her or anything. This might have been a nice guy who was just unaware of things, right?
All right, that's a charitable description.
I think, you know.
But I'll go with that.
We don't hear anything negative. We deserve to be charitable. There's no reason to be critical of someone.
You're right, of course. But I just can't believe that that's how it worked.
Well, and then on the other hand, maybe he should have made more of an effort to be educated. So something like this wouldn't have happened.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's true also. You know, you need to take responsibility at some point to know what's going on around you.
Yes, you do.
So that's a possibility. But John Andrews named the baby Oscar Gavin Andrews, and that's the name that Teresa wanted him to have. And the baby was actually healthy, surprisingly enough.
Yeah. So semi-happy ending.
Yeah.
The baby survived.
Yeah. It's true. Now, Carolyn Simpson of Oklahoma was 21 years old and 6 months pregnant when she was shot and killed by Effie Goodson, a 37-year-old, who had falsely told several people that she was pregnant.
That's barely viable.
So Carolyn worked at a casino where Effie was a customer, and Effie Goodson offered Carolyn a ride home on December 22nd of 2003. Carolyn was found dead in a field. She had been shot in the head. And on December 23rd, Effie brought a dead fetus to the hospital, again, coming to the hospital with a dead fetus.
That's just not well thought through.
Claiming to be the mother. Well, that's mental illness.
Yeah.
That's not right. Investigators determined that she hadn't been pregnant, and then she was arrested. So why did she show up at the hospital with the fetus? Why?
Well, I like your decision.
Yeah.
That it's mental illness.
Yeah.
Because if you thought clearly, you would figure that there's no way I can pull this off.
Right.
So I'm not going to the hospital.
But why do you want to go to the hospital and have credit for having a dead baby?
Well, as
again, what are they trying to get from that?
I'm going back to she's mentally ill. She's not thinking clearly.
But I think you were right earlier when you said there's some kind of validation they're getting from that.
Right.
Yeah. Which I don't understand completely.
I don't either.
No.
Because I guess you can plot about befriending a person and stealing her fetus and passing it off.
Yeah.
And it would seem, okay, if I go to a hospital, I'll get validation of it.
Yeah.
But they don't think that all you have to do is do an exam and figure out that you haven't even given birth. You've never been pregnant.
Right, right. Well, Effie's husband had believed she was expecting, and they'd had a baby shower, and she'd been wearing maternity clothes. So she was actually convicted of murder in the killings of Carolyn Simpson and the 6-month-old fetus, because neither of them survived.
Yeah.
And she got life in prison.
Well, I can see a 6-month-old fetus
No, isn't in those survive. Circumstances, no. So another one in 2004 I thought was sad was Bobby Jo Skinnett. She was discovered in a pool of blood by her mother on December 16th of 2004 in her Missouri home. Now, her mother called 911, describing her daughter's injuries as looking like her stomach had exploded. Yeah, isn't that
awful? That's probably a very apt description.
Yeah, well, that's what I think with the key must have looked like.
Well, the key, well, anything. I mean, you're trying to get the fetus out as quickly as possible, so you're not paying much attention. You're just slicing through everything.
Yeah. So paramedics arrived, and they couldn't save Bobby Joe. They couldn't save Bobby Joe. Authorities determined that Lisa Montgomery, a 36-year-old, posed as someone interested in buying a dog from Bobby Joe. And the newborn survived and was brought to Kansas, where Lisa Montgomery told everyone it was her baby. But then some computer forensics tracked Lisa and Bobby Joe's online communication, because both of them had bred rat terriers, and they may have attended some dog shows together, so she had befriended her. And then Lisa was arrested once they found that out the following day. And then she confessed to strangling Bobby Joe and cutting the fetus from her womb. I guess what they initially said that was Lisa had suffered a miscarriage a few months earlier and then concealed it from her family, but her former husband told authorities that she'd had a tubal ligation in 1990 and that she had a history of falsely telling acquaintances that she was pregnant. So this is another person with some severe mental illness.
There's a lot of mental issues with this person.
Yeah. And then on December 20th, she was charged with kidnapping, resulting in death, and was convicted in October of 2007. So the baby survived, a girl named Victoria Jo Stinnett, and was returned to her family and is being raised by her biological father.
Okay.
So that baby survived.
So another semi-happy ending.
I guess. I mean,
well,
it's a stretch to say happy, but...
The baby survived.
The baby survived. It wasn't a complete horror show.
No. Because most of the time, as we're reading this, nobody survives.
Very rare for the mother to survive. That's why I chose the Michelle Wilkins case as our main case.
It's very rare for the mother to survive.
Yeah.
And it's
she
almost as
it.
Rare for the fetus to survive.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things, as we've said, that can go wrong.
Right. But there's not even an attempt to have the mother survive anyway. The mother's pretty much just a vessel to them.
The mother's a vessel.
Yeah.
Right.
So in 2006, another case was Jamella Tunstall. This is another nightmare case.
Oh, I've heard
Sorry.
This one.
Sorry, have you? Yeah,
I'm leaving now. Goodbye.
Hang in there. So in 2006, Jamella Tunstall was murdered in Illinois by her childhood friend, Tiffany Hall. First, she was knocked unconscious, and her unborn baby was cut from her uterus with a pair of scissors. Now, the baby girl was stillborn. And Tiffany took the body to the park and then called police, telling them she'd given birth in the park and the pregnancy was the result of a rape. Don't know any of the reasons why she said any of these things. I mean, just a shit show, right? I don't know.
Yes.
So then she had a funeral for the infant as her own, but then she confessed to her boyfriend about the infant that it wasn't her baby, she wasn't the baby's mother, and that she'd killed Jamella Tunstall to get the baby. Now, Tiffany Hall lied to the father of Jamella's three older children after that, and she told him that Jamella wanted them home. So Jamella was sitting dead for a few days.
Right.
Right? And Tiffany calls the father of Jamella's three older children, who were 1, 2, and 7, and says, Jamella wants them back, and she wants the car, so I'm going to come pick them up. So she brings the three children back and drowns them one by one.
Yeah, that's why I said I was leaving.
I know.
I don't want to hear this.
So she drowns the 1-year-old, the 2-year-old, and the 7-year-old and hides their bodies.
In the washing machine and the dryer.
Yeah, and this is a public laundry room in the apartment complex. Where she was. So this woman was just nuts, stark, raving mad.
Loony.
Yeah. So Jamella's body was found in some high weeds near the apartment complex, and Tiffany Hall was arrested, and she pled guilty and was sentenced to life in prison. So not one damn good thing about that one. That's just a horror show.
No, we have a mother who didn't survive, a fetus who didn't survive, and the three children who were killed. Holy shit.
So this is a case for improving mental health care in our country.
For sure.
That people are living around like this. I mean, obviously there were signs.
Yes.
That she was crazy. There had to be.
More than crazy.
That she was seriously mentally ill.
Yeah.
I mean, she actually left this woman dead, went and had a funeral for the baby, and then went and got the other kids and killed them. And what's the purpose of that? And these poor kids.
I can't even begin to think of a purpose.
Yeah. And the poor father who let her take them. How does he live with that?
Right.
All right, so I'm running out of steam here, but I have a couple more cases I was going to mention.
Okay, I'm getting really...
I think that was the worst one.
I'm really down here right now.
I know, but I think that was the worst one.
Okay, you got some uplifting ones? I don't
Not
think you
uplifting.
Have any uplifting ones.
No, there's nothing uplifting about the topic. In 2009 in Worcester, Mass., 23-year-old Darlene Haynes was beaten, strangled, and sliced open, her unborn baby stolen from her uterus. Now, a few days later, her former neighbor, Julie Corey, was found in a New Hampshire homeless shelter with the baby.
So this baby survived?
Yes. Darlene had been 8 months pregnant. The baby, a girl, weighed 4.5 pounds, but she was healthy. And when the killing was reported, many expected that it had been committed by someone unable to have a child of his or her own, which seems to be the case with a lot of these women.
Right.
But Julie Corey actually had 5 children. But the thing about that is she didn't have custody of them. Yeah.
Okay.
So she'd been pregnant 8 times in her life. So obviously this is a woman who's looking for self-esteem from procreating. This is how she's valuing herself.
Yeah, but none of the kids stay with her.
No, because she's not capable of raising them.
No,
I wouldn't guess.
She can birth them.
Yeah.
But she can't take care of them.
Right. So she had recently given birth to a stillborn infant at 30 weeks. But 1 month after the stillbirth, she went ahead and had a baby shower, didn't tell people. Now, she wouldn't let her boyfriend, Alex Dion, accompany her to the doctor visits. And then she told him that she had delivered the baby at home. And in the days following the killing, Julie showed off the baby at a family barbecue. So she was walking around saying this was her new baby. And her boyfriend is also believed to be innocent and didn't know what was going on. So a jury convicted Julie Corey of Darlene Haynes' murder, and she was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. So I guess it's not that unusual for some men to believe these stories.
Well, I guess they want to believe these stories.
Yeah.
And if you think about it in a rational sense, these are totally unbelievable stories.
Yeah, but on the other hand, why would you think anyone would make up being pregnant? What are they getting out of that?
Well, that's true. But, I mean, if somebody has a pregnancy that lasts 12 months, you're thinking, well, maybe something's not right here.
Sure, sure.
But otherwise, yeah, I can see that. But, geez, I mean, I'm due in November, and it's March, and you still haven't delivered.
Yeah.
You should be able to figure that out.
Right, right. Okay. Have you got it in you to hear another one?
Well, okay.
So in Washington, D.C. in 2009, Tika Adams, homeless and 9 months pregnant, was abducted by acquaintance Veronica Deramu. Now, Veronica got help from her 17-year-old son to tie up Tika Adams and hold her captive for 4 days. Now, during those 4 days, Veronica attempted to extract the fetus. I don't know what that means. I mean, really.
Is she trying to induce labor?
I don't know. I hope that was it and that she wasn't cutting at her.
Yeah.
But here's some good news. Tika escaped.
How?
I mean, she was severely injured and close to death, but she managed to escape. A neighbor called 911 and both Tika and her baby survived.
All right.
Now you can feel better.
So that's a good ending.
Okay, so I can't tell you anymore.
Well, you said one more. You got another one?
I got a couple more, but if you don't want to hear them, that's okay.
No, okay, but I like this one.
This one's good.
I would have finished with that one.
Yeah, well, it's 2009. I was trying to go in chronological order.
Chronological.
Up to the 2015 case that we started with.
Okay.
But guess what they named the baby?
Miracle.
Yes. Did you know that, or you just guessed? Did you read it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I read it.
You read it. Okay. Well, I had a case in 2011. I think I had a couple in 2011 I was going to read. If you're up for a couple more.
I can do it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm thinking we're going to hear the same stuff.
Yeah, but then we can kind of talk about what they have in common and, you know.
Okay.
Have a little perspective here. So Kathy Coy cut out Jamie Stice's fetus in Bowling Green, Kentucky in 2011. She then left Jamie on the side of a rural road to bleed to death. Now, Kathy originally said she'd given birth to the baby 5 weeks premature, but doctors determined that the baby wasn't hers. Police found out that Kathy Coy was friends with Jamie Stice on Facebook, and then they became suspicious when they couldn't find Jamie. You've got a woman that has a baby.
And a pregnant mom who's not around.
Who's not around. So after some intense interrogations, Kathy led police to Jamie's body. Now, she pled guilty but mentally ill in order to avoid the death penalty, and in 2012, she was sentenced to life in prison.
Okay.
Now, also in 2011, Annette Morales Rodriguez kidnapped Martiza Ramirez Cruz, beat her to death, and cut the fetus out of her womb. Now, the fetus was just days away from being due, and Annette called police hours later to report that she'd given birth in her shower and that the baby wasn't breathing. So the fetus was pronounced dead, and an autopsy, or I guess the infant at that point, the infant was pronounced dead, and an autopsy showed that the baby wasn't hers. So Annette Morales Rodriguez was found guilty of 2 counts of murder because this baby was due.
Right,
and because of where they were located and the laws in that state, she was found guilty of 2 counts of murder.
Mother and baby.
Mother and baby. And she got life in prison.
Okay.
Which seems to be what most of these people have gotten, right? Seems to be everyone I've said has gotten life in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anybody getting away with it.
No. The ones that were mentally ill, they were guilty but mentally ill. There was no not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
But that's such a super hard thing to get.
What is?
Not guilty by reason of insanity.
Oh,
that
well,
hardly ever happens.
That doesn't happen.
No. So, Victoria Marie Perez was reported missing in March of 2011, right after a doctor's appointment, and she was 8 months pregnant. So there were no leads until 3 years later, in late January 2015, when an agent from the Louisville Department of Wildlife and Fisheries received a tip. So this one's quite different. 3 years before there's any tips.
Yes, that's a while.
Yep.
So what'd they do, find a body?
So one of Pamela Causey Frigo's children reported witnessing her mother murder Victoria in 2011.
Whoa, someone ratted her out.
Yeah, her children. Investigators said all the children gave similar accounts of what had happened. And according to investigators, Pamela's husband left her and moved to Texas in 2010. So she lied about being pregnant to get him to come back to her. Now, when Victoria was about 8 months pregnant, Pamela met her at Women and Children's Hospital and lured her back to Oakdale by saying that she had baby clothes to give her. And once they arrived at the residence, Pamela killed Victoria by blunt force and took her down the road to some family property. So she didn't even end up getting the baby out. I don't know what the deal is with that. But she burned the body and buried her there. And the skeletal remains of both Victoria and her fetus were found on that property. So Pamela went to prison and her children went to some foster care. Hopefully some decent foster care.
Well, I have to say, that's a really uplifting end to this.
Are you being sarcastic?
Just a bit.
Okay.
I mean, holy cow.
Well, you know, this is True Crime Brewery, baby. You got to get used to that.
Yeah, but these are horrible.
These are horrendous. But instead of focusing on the horrendousness of the crimes, let's talk about the psychology behind it, the phenomenon itself that would make women do this. What can you tell me about that?
Other than they're crazy?
Yeah, other than that.
I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, they have to be able to validate a pregnancy. They need something to hold on to a boyfriend, husband, or whatever.
Yeah, but why?
I don't know why.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to look into that for me.
No.
Okay.
There isn't any why.
Sure, there's a why.
What is it?
I mean, well, there are women that value themselves by what they do and what they can do in the world. And then there are women who value themselves by what they can do as a woman as far as giving birth. I think there's a similar thing on women valuing themselves by their appearance. So it's all about where a woman gets her self-esteem and regard for herself. And I think these women that are getting their self-esteem by producing a baby and trying to keep a man in their life, there's something seriously lacking there in their self-esteem.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that.
Right.
I mean, that's obvious.
Right. But I think this is probably a lot to do with the way they're raised and what they've seen in their families.
We don't know that.
Well, we don't know that.
We can surmise.
Well, there is a fact, and I don't know where I read this fact, but I do believe it's true. And if someone wants me to get the reference to back it up, I certainly will do that. But there is a fact that the more educated a woman is, the less likely she is to feel the need to have a child.
Okay.
All right.
I'll go with that.
Because they see more to themselves than that. If you're lacking in education or an outlet for your talents and your thoughts, not necessarily just education, you're valuing yourself on what your physical body can produce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem, more for women than for men.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, us guys, we just have to cruise along.
Right. So, not to get too deep on that, but I think that's really at the heart of it. I think that's a reason why some women just keep having babies.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of women do this, but some women just keep having babies and don't really accomplish much else in their life because this is the only way they know to get attention and to get love. So I think these women definitely had that. They had it to an extreme, of course.
Yes.
And probably some other, what would you say? Some other psychiatric...
I think they're mentally ill.
Yes, but they have some other diagnoses coming in there. It's yes. More than just low self-esteem, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what makes them think it's okay to use this other woman's body as a vessel and kill her and take her baby? That's a whole other thing that goes, you know, yeah. Many steps higher.
Way higher. No, it's a fundamental disbelief in your worth as a human. So you have to prove somehow that you're a good person.
And if you don't feel the worth of yourself, you're not going to feel the worth of others.
Right.
Right? How can you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, fortunately, it's a very rare crime, but it's fascinating and horrifying.
Horrifying mostly.
Yeah.
And fascinating.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Because there's really a whole different dynamic behind it than most other crime.
Yes.
I mean, you have the crime of kidnapping or stealing an infant, which is one thing, but this is taking it to a whole new level.
It's really amped up the violence level.
Yeah.
Because you're at best incapacitating the pregnant mother, but usually going to kill her.
Yeah. I mean, I think, how many of these women survived? Was it just Michelle?
Not too many.
No.
Hardly any.
Yeah.
So
it is a murder as well as a kidnapping.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for talking with me about it. I know that it wasn't necessarily a pleasant topic, but certainly interesting and worth a discussion.
Well, I thank you for the education.
Yeah?
No, that was a very cogent discussion.
Yeah.
Of what drives these people.
Well, I mean, I'm just going off what I think and what I've yeah. read in the past. But as a woman, these are things I definitely have considered. And I can see a lot of that this has to do with being a woman.
Yeah. And I have the male view.
Now, what about the men that help, though?
I'm not going to do that.
No?
No.
I mean, are they just...
I would like to think that they were just in the dark.
No. I'm not talking about those men. I'm talking about the couple of men we talked about who actually helped. What is their motivation? What is their thought process?
Their motivation is to show dominance over the women.
So they're just bastards anyway.
Yeah.
They're
fuckheads.
They're murderous bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. All right. Well, that was a good discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I just want to add before we go that there are several ways to support True Crime Brewery, and I'm hoping that there's one of them that will work for you. First of all, we have the 5-star reviews, which are greatly appreciated. They're still coming in pretty nicely. We're still at 4.5 stars, but I can see that 5 right around the corner.
That's right. It's gleaming at us in the distance.
The little star just gets a little bit fuller each day.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's coming.
It's coming. We also have an Amazon affiliate link, tigrabber.com/Amazon. And if you do your Amazon shopping through our link, we'll get a small kickback. And you don't pay anything extra. We just get a little bit of, you know, what you spent there just for sending you that in that direction.
Pennies on the dollar.
Yep. Now you can also join Team Tigrabber and pledge as little as $2 a month, as much as $5 a month to help keep True Crime Brewery running smoothly. We have premium episodes coming up soon. I keep promising, but it is coming up soon. And we'll have our regular weekly episodes, but then we're going to have a bonus episode. I'm hoping to do one every month or so, and only members will be able to access these.
That's right, so you want to be a member.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. We also have a store on our website now, so if you just go to tigrabber.com/shop TCB, you can get yourself a cool t-shirt or some other cool TCB stuff. You can also go to our website, tigrabber.com, and just click up in the menu on Shop the Brewery, and you can see what we've got for sale there.
There's cool stuff, and we're going to increase our inventory.
Well, the t-shirts are a big hit, but I do have some ideas for other things I'd like to add.
So
bottle openers, maybe some shot glasses.
Yeah.
So we're going to add a few more cool things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Keep looking.
Yep. So if you can do any of those things, that is much appreciated, and that will help our podcasts continue to grow. So thank you for listening. We're available on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, and even iHeartRadio. And we'll be back next week with another episode of True Crime Brewery with another beer from our in-house beer expert, Dick.
And I'll just say to Conscious Chef, congratulations.
It was I think it's Conscious Cook.
Conscious Cook.
Same thing.
Oh, I fucked up.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. Conscious Cook.
Yeah.
So be sure to send us your particulars so we can get the goodies to you.
Yes.
It was a great review.
Really nicely done. And thanks to everyone else who sent them, because there were some really nice ones.
There were.
Very nicely done.
A tough choice.
And I mean, really not to be, you know, some of them were better than the ones you do.
Excuse me?
I think you were a little threatened by some of them, like, holy shit, these are really good, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Yeah. I was looking at Conscious Cook.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how come I'm not as funny as she is?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you are. You're just in your own way.
Yeah, I'm dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but those are good reviews. We enjoyed listening to them. And we're going to probably do another contest somewhere down the line.
Yeah, we'll have to think of something.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we will.
We will. So thanks, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.